flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
We are doing the business, conducting business in the NFL, and that includes hiring new head coaches. Still have one opening that has yet to be filled. That's in New Orleans. Maybe expecting an announcement at some point, unless, of course, they're waiting for Kellen Moore, who is with the Eagles. But we're days away from Super Bowl. We've got plenty of time to see what else is going on. Also monitoring what's happening in D.C. I'll update you because there are more details and more information coming in, even as we head through these overnight hours. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence online at A-Law Radio and our Facebook page as well. If you sent your questions for Ask Amy Anything, I did go back and answer a bunch. And also got people inviting me to come live in Kansas City after I was raving about Kansas City as part of the new video that's up on our YouTube channel. Producer Pete and I did some trivia for Philadelphia and Kansas City, and I did, in fact, go home on Wednesday morning and tell my husband I want to move to Kansas City. So now I've got invites from Kansas City locals who want me to come live there and that Casey would be happy to have me. So we'll see. I'm not sure I can convince him, but he does love barbecue. Jacksonville is one of those teams that has filled its head coach with a brand new dude named Liam Cohen.
It starts with communication. It starts with the alignment and communication at every level, right? Building first and foremost the best staff that we can build. Because it's like I mentioned, it's about these guys. So how do we put the best coaches in place to help these players reach their full abilities?
Duval.
Oh, man. Whatever else Liam Cohen said, it may have been lost in his Duval public attempt. We're pleased to welcome JP Shadrick, who is a friend of the show, sideline reporter, pre and post host, really covers everything that has to do with the Jaguars for their radio network. Well, JP, I will start with Liam. What was the reaction to the new head coach in Jacksonville?
Well, you know, it was a weird, wild swing of emotions. I'll say that, Amy. I mean, let's rewind a little bit to the firing of Doug Peterson that day after the season, Black Monday. It wasn't the whole thing. Trent Baalke stayed on as the general manager. Then there was the press conference with the owner, Shad Khan, and Trent Baalke together, and some mixed reviews, let's say, on that after the fact. Okay, so the next 2 weeks go by. They go through the process. They interview 10 candidates for the head coaching position, most of them virtual. And then Mr. Khan, we hear the other day, said after those 10 interviews, he reevaluated everything, kind of reflected on the process, and realized, okay, it's time for a change at the general manager spot. And then Liam Cohen is back in the picture again. And, you know, there was a comment in there, too, that Tony Boselli's involved now in the coaching search, and he's the Hall of Fame left tackle here, and there's not really a title for him right now, but at some point there might be. But that's all happened in the last week. And then Liam Cohen, there was reports, as you all know, he was going to go back to Tampa Bay as the OC for more money, and then came back and interviewed and took the job. So if you ask the Jaguars fans about Liam Cohen and the way it went down, I think they're all fired up because they stole him away from Tampa. You know, let's see how it goes the next little while. He's got some work to do. He's got to build out a staff. He's a young guy. It's his first coaching job. And but so far, I think so good. But it's been a whirlwind here in Jacksonville, Amy.
Definitely has. JP, I go back to 23 season when the Jags were 8-3, had a couple games on the rest of the AFC South, and then the wheels came off. It seemed like the Jags never recovered from that in the 24 season. What happened over the last year and a half? Because this team's got talent. I don't get it.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, that was a weird one. Now, you got to go back to that time frame, 8-3 start, and then some injuries started to set in. I'm not going to lean on injuries, but I'm just telling you how it went down. The quarterback had four different injuries that year. Christian Kirk got hurt, had a core injury, and didn't play the rest of the season. The wide receiver, who's a key part of what they wanted to do on offense. The O-line had injuries. They were rotating around. They had a lot of stuff going on there. But all they had to do was win one more game. And they needed one more game in that season, and they couldn't get it done. You always say when it's going good, oh, yeah, you know what? No, one season, it's always a new season. It you know, it doesn't really bleed over into the next year. Well, this one did. It felt like it did. You can say it didn't, and it never does. But this one, in hindsight, it felt like, okay, there's a little hangover here. What's going on? Like, how do you shake out of this thing? They never really got it together. They started 0-4 this year. I mean, Trevor Lawrence was there. They got the offense. It's year three of this group. Like, can they figure it out? They got a couple new pieces at wide receiver. They couldn't do it on offense. They didn't have a consistent running game. The defense was awful, absolutely awful. And you know, in 2023, they were middle of the pack in the NFL, like 15th, 6th, somewhere in there. I don't know the exact number. But not awful, but not great. I mean, average, right? They changed the defensive staff. They fired everybody. New defensive coordinator. Let's get this better. We need to be better. We need a top 10. They were one of the worst defenses in the NFL last year. Couldn't stop anybody. Big plays every week. It got worse, and it got a whole lot worse. So they couldn't stop anybody on defense. And when it mattered late in games, they couldn't make a big play, or they would give up a massive play in the final 5 minutes of a game, 4 minutes of a game. And that's what it was. So they lost 10 one-score games.
Right.
And that's impossible to do. I mean, it's really hard to do. And that it was a combination of those things. The offense couldn't get out of their own way. As Mr. Khan said, the owner, they were predictable because, you know what? You're predictable when you can't run. So they couldn't run when they needed to run on offense, and the defense couldn't stop anybody when it mattered. So it bled over from 2023 into 24. And then it just, you know, the quarterback gets hurt again and, you know, has the shoulder injury and tries to come back and then gets hit in the head. And the season was lost by that point anyway. You could feel it unraveling as it went along, especially in the last 2 months.
There's been some debate, maybe I would call it tepid debate, over Trevor Lawrence. How have you seen him grow, whether it's leadership, whether it's skills on the field, and take that role, even in the midst of all this adversity?
Well, Amy, I mean, no matter what, he's going to be the guy here until 2030. So, I mean, he's here. Like, he's like, he could argue about if he is or if he's not. He is. Like, he's the guy. Like, he's going to be around. So that was, I think, the number one priority in this whole coaching process, you know, interviews and things. That's one of the, if not number one, it's right there near the top. Like, how do you get Trevor Lawrence right? You got to think about what he's gone through here in Jacksonville, right? Obviously, he came in 2021, Urban Meyer, his rookie year. That didn't go well. Obviously, another change, right? Another offense. You know, the last 3 years, different offense. He's been hurt. He missed a bunch of games 2 years ago at the end. Missed some this past season. You know, is that a concern moving ahead? Can he battle through it? This will be another offense yet again moving forward. Got to get another relationship with a third head coach now in what will be his fifth season in the NFL. But he's the guy. He's the franchise quarterback. He signed the contract. Mr. Khan believes in it. And obviously the head coach certainly believes in it, because that's a big piece of why he's here right now, Liam Cohen. So how do they build it around him? How do they make him his best self? And that's going to be the priority now for Liam Cohen is, okay, what does Trevor Lawrence do well? What can we get him to do a little bit better? But how can we get pieces around him and formulate this offense around what Trevor Lawrence can do? And you got to keep him upright. We talked about the run game. Well, it starts with the offensive line. And you got to protect the quarterback, right? But sometimes the quarterback has to protect himself, too. He's got to learn that there's some fights you just don't need to fight, right? I mean, a head first dive in a game late in the season, and you hurt your left shoulder, and you're done. I mean, that's one of those things. Okay, maybe we step out of bounds here, you know? So it's got to be an organizational philosophy that the quarterback stays upright. And that's what the Indianapolis Colts did so well with Peyton. You know what? We're going to call plays that protect the quarterback. If we have to throw it incomplete and throw it in the dirt, fine. If we have to teach Peyton Manning to throw it in the dirt and not run, okay. He's not going to run. He's not that guy. But if we have to dirt the ball, okay, fine. We'll take a play. If we need to design certain things for Peyton that he doesn't get a hit, I'd rather have the next three drives instead of miss you for 3 weeks. Like, that's got to happen, I think. And that's got to be an organizational philosophy to keep Trevor Lawrence on the field, because that's what this offense has to have. If he's not out there, you don't have a shot at all. So I think that'll be a priority in this offseason.
The defense was 31st in the NFL. So that's also tough when you're constantly in tight games late on the clock. What's the first priority on that side of the ball?
Well, I mean, how long do we have to talk, Amy? I mean, we've got one priority, you know, that's the offensive side. That's one thing, the head coach is the offensive guy. All right, well, who's going to be they're interviewing defensive coordinator. So clearly the first-year coordinator last year is not going to make it to next year. They've got edge players. They got Josh Hines-Allen under contract through 2028. They've got Trayvon Walker, who's the number one overall pick, who had 10 sacks last year on the other side. I would say the interior of the defensive line left a lot to be desired. They've actually invested some money there and just hadn't worked out. Really the middle of the defense. Middle of the D-line, linebacker play was inconsistent in the middle, and then the safeties in the secondary. The middle of the defense, all the way from the front to the back, that's where it is. Pretty much every level they had issues. And, you know, from blown coverages in the back and Andre Sisco running the wrong way sometimes and linebacker Devin Lloyd doing the same thing. I mean, he's a first-round pick too, right? And not having the girth in the middle of the defensive line. I mean, that's where it begins for me. So they've got some issues, in, at least on the personnel side on defense, I think, more than the offensive side. They got a lot more pieces on offense. They've got a couple cornerstones on defense, but they've really got to do a lot of work in the personnel department this offseason. Free agency draft to get that defense back up to middle of the pack of the NFL. What is their identity? And that's Liam Cohen's job.
Right.
Guess what? That's what you're going to be doing until until we kick off the ball in September.
Well, he said, I want savages.
I do too. Yeah, you know, I agree. Liam, good call. I think you need, it's a solid word, right? I mean, you need guys that just have that little extra in them. Maybe it's a little echo of the whistle stuff, you know, an attitude that they don't really give a damn about the other guy, you know, and we're going to go and knock your quarterback around.
Or
how about
biting kneecaps, shades of Dan Campbell?
I'm cool with that, too. That seems to be working out well in Detroit, so that's fine. Like, whatever that attitude or something, guys that really just care, like, that give a damn about football, and that's all they care about. Like, you need that. You need more of that. We need more of that in the league, by the way. That's not just a Jaguar issue, right? So that's what the savages comment is about, and I agree. I mean, that's certainly what when you're 31st in the league in defense and you're not even close, you need a whole lot more of those guys.
What was the response to the interesting version of Duval that Liam Cohen gave us?
All right, Amy, here's the backstory. So we had a staff meeting at like noon. It was like the business staff came over to the football building and the football staff's there, that whatever's left is there, right? And I had to introduce Liam Cohen. So in the hallway outside, we're like, hey, coach, we're going to do, after the fact, we're going to do this, you know, first Duval social media hit. And you're going to hold the thing and let's hear you try it. Duval, all right, it was great. And then he gets on the stage with the staff, and he was great. It was on social media, and it was fine. And then 3 hours later, he kind of snuck it into the thing, and it happened, and whatever. You know, he's not fish from Rhode Island. I don't know. Like, he hasn't been around here. I have no idea. It'll come. I think it's really blown up about nothing, and we've got another fan event coming up on Thursday night. And he'll get another chance to do his first Duval in front of a bunch of fans, and I think he's going to nail it this time.
JP, before I let you go, you had a chance to call a game in the last 6 weeks in which the Kansas City Chiefs were playing on Christmas. Honestly, I look at that Christmas game against the Steelers, and it feels like that's when the offense finally found some consistency and some rhythm to it. Where do they get their staying power?
The staying power is just the way they find a way to craft plays up out of nowhere and put them in there at the impossible moment that you don't think it's coming. That's the magic of Andy Reid, is that they'll have something in their back pocket, or maybe they've worked on it earlier, or maybe they brought it back again but didn't put it in a game. You saw it last week, the diamond formation or whatever, the two touchdown runs. I mean, that they didn't run that all year. That's the magic. And then you have the players execute that in a key moment. That's where it's at. And obviously the quarterback is number one. The tight end's doing his thing. And then that game on Christmas Day, he had a touchdown, a longer touchdown, of course. I had some plays as the game went along. And it's a weird thing about this team, though, in Kansas City. They don't have a super down the middle of the field threat. But they've got threats everywhere else. They're running wide. They're running the wide receivers out of the backfield. It is tough. And then here comes Kelce again, running a little 7-yard turnaround and then flipping around and running for 7 after the catch. And it's a magical 14-yard first down, right? That's what they do. And they're going to do that to death. And the defense is really good, too. So they've got it. They've got it locked down. It is a formula, and they know how to do it. And they've got the magic formula right now in Kansas City.
It cracks me up because it does feel like over the last 2 years, the rest of the NFL is so sure that they had reeled in the Chiefs. We got them. We got them. Oh, we got them. And you talk about the number of games the Jaguars lost that were one score finals. Yeah. The Chiefs excel in those situations. And so often it feels like it comes down to that experience. And there's just no shortcut to the kind of experience they've got on the field.
I'm not sure they'd love to blow teams out. I mean, who doesn't? But, like, that's just not how it's gone.
Right.
They don't score 30 points. It's not like they're not putting points on the board either.
Until last weekend, right?
Right. But all season long, they didn't score 30. It's like, who's winning all these games? They're the only team that's winning under 30 points consistently. But they know how to do it in a key moment, and they know how to make the call. They know how to execute. They know what it takes to win championships. But, hey, you know what? If Saquon Barkley gets loose on the other side, we got ourselves a ball game.
You can find JP online at JP Shadrick, Shadrick. You hear him not only on the Jaguars radio network, but also their pre and post and all of their reporting, and then also play-by-play on Westwood One. It's great to connect with you for the first time in 25. JP, thank you so much.
All right, Amy. Always a pleasure. Appreciate you.
Jacksonville is undergoing yet another facelift, and in weird waves. So can Liam Cohen be the answer? I was sure Doug Peterson was going to be the answer for longer than he was, and he was. They won a division title, and then were 8-3 that following season. And when the wheels came off, they didn't just wreck into a ditch. They were never able to get the wheels back on, weirdly enough. It didn't work. They never could make the necessary repairs to get back on track. At A-Law Radio, our Facebook page as well, following what's happening in D.C. and let you know the latest, since there is a major sports element to it, where I often say that sports is a microcosm of real life, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, of course, because real life involves real people, and that's certainly sports, but there are times where even the sports world or covering sports, talking about sports, doesn't provide the escape, the complete and total escape that many people wish that it would or are looking for. An American Airlines regional jet with 64 people on board, that includes flight attendants and pilots, and it crashed midair with a Black Hawk helicopter that had three soldiers on board. And I know coming up in a few hours, officials will provide another update on the crash. But right now, on the bank of the Potomac, there are hundreds of emergency vehicles. The last number I saw was 300 different rescue officials that were on the ground there. I've seen video and photos of divers in the water as well. Some of the challenges, it's dark. Obviously, the water very cold, so they're trying to work as quickly as possible to get inside the fuselage of the plane that was broken into a couple pieces. And there are some photos out there, too, of the wreckage in the water in the Potomac. And you can see part of the helicopter that's upside down and almost entirely submerged. But there's a wheel that's sticking out, as well as some of the mangled body of the helicopter. But the photos indicate that it's almost entirely submerged. And the last I knew, they were still trying to get into the helicopter because of the challenge. It was moving around and not stable. And of course, there's sharp metal and the divers have to be really careful, but trying to get in there to get to the soldier.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But not believing that anyone could survive or could have stayed inside that wreckage and found a way to survive. And as for the plane, I know that they are in the water and they've been working around that wreckage. There were, as I say, 60 passengers, two pilots and two flight attendants. And at this point, they're still searching for survivors. They have not termed this a recovery operation. It's still considered search and rescue. Even in the cold, the water is roughly 35 degrees. Hypothermia sets in roughly a half hour or so, maybe not even that long if they're in water. But the fuselage and the second piece of the plane, they're in 7 feet of water. So there's large parts of that plane that are above the surface of the water. It's just hard to imagine not only a midair collision, but also the impact of hitting the surface of the river. It's after hours with Amy Lawrence and trying to provide as much, well, trying to search for as much information as I can, but on the different news outlets that I've seen and the reports that I've seen, they are still terming this a search and rescue operation. We are finding that there is a tie with the sports world, and U.S. figure skating has confirmed that several members of their team, their contingent that was competing in Wichita in the world champ or the U.S. championships, excuse me, they just took place in Wichita earlier this week. I think they wrapped up on the 26th, and they have a development camp for young skaters, elite level skaters. So ones that they identify could potentially represent the U.S. in world competitions or even in the Olympics. So there were a bunch of young skaters and their families who left that development camp in Wichita and got on the plane that crashed into the river. I've seen a bunch of different numbers of in terms of the number of people that belong to U.S. figure skating. I don't want to pass that along because it's not been confirmed by the organization itself or by, at this point, more than one post here or there on social media. But U.S. figure skating did at least put out a statement itself to confirm that there were members of their contingent, their team, that were on the plane. And Russian media is confirming that a pair of former world champions, they're married world champions, who competed and won gold medals in the 1990s, they were on the plane. They've been coaching in the United States, coaching figure skating in the United States for 15 years. And their adult son, young adult son, 23-year-old, was with them and was also on the plane. So that's coming from Russian state media and from the Kremlin, that they did in fact lose these two champion figure skaters who, again, they competed in the 1990s, and their 23-year-old son, that they were among the people that working with this figure skating contingent, and they were also on the plane. Otherwise, the only real reports stateside are coming based on not just the statement from U.S. figure skating, but also there's a pairs skater, a young man named Luke Wang, who competes for the Red, White, and Blue. And he told McClatchy News, so this is in Wichita, that skaters who qualified for this elite division stayed an extra day. And then he told this news outlet that right after that development camp wrapped up, several boarded this American Airlines flight. And he said he and other members of the team were notified by U.S. figure skating about the crash via text message. And so he's already been on social media saying that among the passengers were skaters and coaches. Again, this is a member of the team. His name is Luke Wong. And he's saying that he's got teammates and coaches that were on the flight. Another skater who is an ice dancer, praying for families and my skating community. I saw a post from a young girl, probably preteen, putting out the social media IDs of some of her teammates and saying, has anyone seen updates? Does anyone have updates on these people? So it's clear that the U.S. figure skating community has been rocked by this. I didn't know this other than just reading about it, but 60 years ago or 60 plus years ago, the U.S. figure skating team at the time died in a plane crash. So as you can imagine, this is doubly painful and really resonates. And there's got to be a lot of shock there with U.S. figure skating, even though, of course, the organization would have turned over. But to have generations of figure skaters involved. So, yes, we don't know the numbers, but several coaches and skaters and their families, because these were young people, these were juvenile figure skaters. It was a training program in the wake of the championships, and they were part of the national development team. I have seen some pictures of the young people who are presumed missing, who are presumed on that flight, and they're little. They're kids. I don't want to say any of their names until they're confirmed, because I feel like that's unfair and also irresponsible. But as I say, some of the photos that are out there, they're being put out there in the wake of this announcement from U.S. figure skating. You're talking about little kids, you know, like 11, 12, 13, 14. I mean, these are real young people and real heartbreaking. So don't have a lot of other details beyond that. Again, a mid-air collision around 9 o'clock last night, D.C. time. They're still in the water. Hundreds of people trying to find survivors if they can. But we've also seen they've got a staging area on the bank of the river. And every now and then you'll see a stretcher with a body on it, a body bag on it. And so I know they're doing what they can. I've seen some reports initially that they've got 18 people pulled out of the water, which means they've got a long way to go, and it's dark and it's cold, and they're thinking about them and their families and hoping that there'll be a miracle. But U.S. figure skating weighing in even now in the middle of the night. So we'll let you know if we hear any other details before the show is done. Certainly one of those shows where sports don't seem to matter at all. Doing our best to kind of walk through and provide updates when we can. But I appreciate you sticking with us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
A riddle sponsored by Progressive Insurance. What do your home and auto have in common? Progressive protects them both. It was an easy riddle. Learn more at Progressive.com. Let's tip off the NBA. Warriors over the Thunder, 116-109. Andrew Wiggins with 27 points. It was the T-Wolves over the Suns, 121-113. Anthony Edwards, 33 points. Kyrie Irving with 25. Mavericks over the Pelicans, 137-136. Now to Boston.
Stop and start, drives baseline, gets to the couple scores where he literally has gone wherever he wanted to go tonight.
Sean Grandy on Celtics Radio. Celtics over the Bulls, 122-100. Jaylen Brown, 28 points. Kristaps Porzingis, 34 points, 11 boards. Now to New York.
Inside to Hart. Hart, another layup. Banks it home. Another assist for Jalen Brunson. He had 17 the first game against Denver. He's got 15 tonight.
Mike Breen on MSG. The Knicks beat the Nuggets, 122-112. Jalen Brunson, 30 points, 15 boards. Elsewhere, the Sixers over the Kings, 117-104. Clippers 128, Spurs 116, Cavs 126, Heat 106, Nets over the Hornets 104-83, Pacers 133, Pistons 119, the Raptors over the Wizards 106-82. Indiana Fever star Caitlin Clark will not participate in a special three-point challenge during NBA All-Star Weekend. Reggie Miller will reportedly be the lead NBA analyst for NBC starting next season. College basketball, number one Auburn over LSU, 87-74. Number four Alabama beat Mississippi State, 88-84. Number six Houston over West Virginia, 63-49. NHL in overtime, Penguins 3, Utah 2. Sidney Crosby the game winner. It was the Canucks over the Predators, 3-1. Devils 5, Flyers nothing. Wild over the Leafs, 3-1. And the Panthers, like the Kings, 3-0. I'm Peter Schwartz.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
up toward the top of the hour. We always enjoy debate in sports, right? Because if we all agreed, life would be really boring. And sports radio would be really boring if we all thought the same way and reacted the same way. So to that end, producer Pete's come up with a list of two roads that diverge in a wood. And we get to choose the path that fits us best here on After Hours.
All right. We got five of them here. So let's take the first path. The Bills in the AFC Championship game in 2025 or the Commanders in the NFC Championship game in 2025?
Oh, man. So I can only take one of these.
Yes.
I'm going to say the Commanders in the NFC Championship game because not only did we see the potential, but they're a very young squad. They're still early in their development. They've got some great pieces in place, but they've got some growing up to do as well. And did they capture lightning in a bottle? Absolutely. Do they have great confidence? They've already had some incredible training in these pressure cooker situations, if you will. And it's not that I don't believe in the Bills. I just believe the path through the AFC is a lot more challenging. It's fraught with more landmines than is the NFC, especially the NFC East, right? Because I don't know that the Giants are going to be any big challenge next year. I wonder about the Cowboys. I do think they have a talented roster, so I'd like to see what happens there. But I believe that in the NFC, you've got fewer really good teams. So it's not as top-heavy as the AFC, which it's just got challenges all over it. So if I can only have one, I'll take the Commanders getting back to the NFC Championship.
All right, take one path on this one. The Jaguars, we just talked about them, Liam Cohen. Under 500 in 2025 or consecutive playoff appearances in the next 3 years?
Oh my gosh, that's hard. Because I kind of feel like my path would be somewhere in the middle. I don't think they'll have consecutive playoff appearances back to back to back, only because in the AFC South, still think the Texans, or I do believe the Texans are the cream of the crop there. I think the Colts are getting better, although they've wasted a couple of opportunities. Again, the AFC is tough. You could have all three. Well, you could have two wild cards come from the north. You could have two wild cards come from the west like it did this year. The East is going to get better because I think the Dolphins, if Tua can stay healthy, are a better team. So I think it's more likely that the Jaguars don't break even next season with a brand new head coach than that they make the playoffs 3 years in a row.
Okay, next one. Pete Carroll wins a ring in Las Vegas. Or the Chiefs win three more Super Bowls in the next 4 years.
Oh, wait. Win a ring ever in Vegas?
Yes.
Okay, so not in the next 4 years.
No. Pete Carroll, in his tenure with the Raiders, wins a ring.
I think that's more likely than Kansas City winning three more Super Bowls in 4 years.
Includes this year.
Okay, but still, that'd be extraordinary. I mean, this is extraordinary. It is really hard to stay on top. They're taking every other team's best shot, which we see over and over again. The fact that they've survived to this point, especially when they do not blow teams out or they rarely blow teams out, I don't think so. I think we're going to see a phenomenon like what we saw in women's basketball when Tennessee and UConn were the class of the sport. And every other school had to raise its level of play to be able to compete. And, you know, we could talk about other examples of that as well. The fact is everyone else in the AFC and in the NFL is going to continue to get better because they have to if they want to compete with the Chiefs. And I think in the NFL, you've got a far more level playing field. So I'll say this is crazy to even speak out loud because you're giving me a time frame of three Super Bowls in 4 years. I'll say it's more likely that Pete Carroll wins another NFL championship.
What happens first? 10-minute NBA quarters or an NBA team overseas?
Ooh. I'll go with the 10-minute NBA quarters. I know that Adam Silver, the commissioner, told Dan Patrick on Wednesday that there's not a lot of support for it. But to put one NBA team overseas seems so silly. If the NFL can't figure out a way to do it, and the NFL is desperately trying to figure out a way to do it, and then you consider the number of games on the schedule. So it'd be crazy enough with the travel to put one NFL team across the pond, even though it's, what, a 6 to 7 hour flight if you're coming from the East Coast to get to London. But that travel, especially if they have to go to the West Coast of the United States, that's for a 17-game regular season. That's nothing compared to 82 games and the fact that you would have to play half your games on a different continent and then constantly going back and forth. I don't think that's likely. So I'll go with the 10-minute NBA quarters.
Okay. Dodgers win the 25 World Series or the field?
I'm going to say the Dodgers go back-to-back and win the 25 World Series, and this is not going to be popular if they do. You'll have a lot of baseball fans complaining about the lack of a level playing field. We're just talking about that with the NFL, with the fact that there's little integrity when it comes to the competition, except the Dodgers are competing within the parameters of the rules. Right? They're not doing anything illegal. They're not doing anything untoward. They're spending money in order to make money. And now they've become this pipeline for Japanese athletes with the success of Shohei Ohtani. And he's not the only one, of course. Yu Darvish has been in there as well. Now they've got Yamamoto and Sasaki. It's becoming Japanese friendly. So these stars are going to target the Dodgers. That's what we've heard from some of these guys. They want to play for the Dodgers because they feel like it's more welcoming. And they've got teammates who are also countrymen. So I think the Dodgers, the money they're spending is because they're making money. They're not afraid to invest. And they have such an insulation, if you will. When Freddie Freeman gets hurt, what happens? Well, Mookie Betts can step up. When Shohei Ohtani is pitching and maybe doesn't have 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases, well, then you've got a Mookie Betts. They just keep adding pieces, and they have such great depth where they actually have an embarrassment of riches, and guys may be unsatisfied with their playing time. But one more thing, Pete. The biggest challenge for them last year was their pitching rotation. They had 25 different starters in that rotation, and they had bullpen starts in the postseason. Now they've actually got a starting rotation, which should include Shohei Ohtani, but that could stay intact. It also has some depth, so they're more insulated against injuries to that group. So I think they're going to be even better in 25, and they'll be the team to beat.
One more. Ohtani wins a triple crown or wins a Cy Young in 25.
Oh. See, he's going to be doing both, so I think his hitting numbers are going to drop. Why not a Cy Young? He hasn't done that yet, so with a couple of MVPs and some history at the plate, maybe he wants to focus more on his arm, and so I'll give him a Cy Young because he needs to be decorated in that arena as well.
There you go.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. While we're talking about international athletes, of which Shohei Ohtani is one and certainly has an international following, Victor Wembanyama is the same. I'm not sure if you heard this. Now, he's, 7'25". He's tall, he's lanky, he's lean, he's extremely athletic. He's getting fouled a lot, as you can imagine, because sometimes that's the only way to put any type of resistance against him. But he feels like he's not getting favorable calls. Where have we heard this before in different sports? And actually, after Wednesday's Spurs game, he was kind of upset. Now, he does it in such a polite way. He expresses himself in such a polite way. But this is him maybe starting to angle for a little more attention from the officials.
It feels unfair sometimes, you know, but it's, of course, we talk about it with the staff, and there is some stuff I have to do to help myself, you know. First of all, you know, being strong and not bailing out shots.
So he was upset after they played the Clippers, and that was Wednesday night, and he got shoved to the court by Zubac. And felt like there should have been a call there. But he believes he's not getting the same calls or respect, equates it to respect, from NBA officials. And so he highlights it during his post-game press conference. And he says it's not this one particular incident. It's frustration. and it's feeling like I don't get a fair shake. I don't get a fair whistle. Now, as you can imagine, I'm going to equate this with Caitlin Clark in the WNBA. There are pros who are established in the league who are trying to see if they can wear him out by being more physical with him. They're trying to see if they can play him tough, put a body on him, hit him every now and then when they can get away with it, and maybe wear him out so he's not quite so effective on both ends of the court. So it is up to him, in part, to get stronger, to withstand the poundings and the rigors of a long NBA season, kind of like what Caitlin had to do. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.